The Howard case, Mr. Brittle and Mr. Jeffrey. Morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Brittle, do you desire to reserve any rebuttal time?
5 minutes. Good morning, Judges Howard. My name is Wallace Brittle. I represent Mr. Howard. Compared to that last case, I think this is going to be a lot shorter.
You're making promises. I hope you can keep.
Well, I guess it would depend on what comes from that side of the table, I'm afraid. Judges, there are three cases, basically, that I'm resting my argument on, and along with the judge's own statements from the transcript. This was a long and drawn-out trial that had standby counsel, and I was activated the morning of trial and had a jury, and then we let the jury go. And so somehow I was able to preserve the argument on the specific intent. It's important to remember, I think, in this case, that this is an attempted crime. It's not a crime that was consummated. It's not a crime that we can look back and say, well, Mr. Howard shut off the windpipe of Dan Hudson, and therefore what did he expect was going to happen, but he would die. Well, he didn't die. He
had to be shot before he let go, and even after he was shot, apparently that he was holding on so tight that he still had difficulty breathing.
Yes, sir. He's a very big fella and a very strong individual, and it's our allegation that his intent was so strong to be released, to get his black book, or to leave, or to be free, or to resist arrest, or to get back at his girlfriend and maliciously wound her again. But his intent was not to kill Dan Hudson, and there's no circumstantial evidence without argument show that he intended it. Judge Sherritt, a very great judge, Judge Sherritt says in the malicious wounding ruling, he told LaShonda Womack that he was going to kill her. Don't we take him at his word, Mr. Brittle? Yes, sir. I guess you can infer that the malicious wounding, he had malice. He said, I'm going to kill you. He cut her with a knife. The judge found he cut her with a knife. Therefore, he inferred malice, malicious wounding. And then 5 minutes later, my client was saying, I don't want to hurt, to the police officers. He was saying, I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to hurt you. Y'all just need to let me go. I don't want to hurt you. He said it over and over, and Officer Byrd said that. But now we don't take the defendant at his word. If we did, that we would have direct evidence.
Couldn't he change his mind, though, once the other officer grabs him by his pants and you're struggling, then she grabs him by his dreadlocks, they all end up on the floor.
Yes, sir.
In that moment, I mean, we have plenty of case law that says, premeditation only takes a moment.
And I wrote that down. I think that we can argue that he had an intent. I don't think we can say that he did not have some intent. Did his intent change throughout the struggle? Like you're saying, Judge Beal, I think that it's possible that it did. But even when he was on the ground, the transcript is clear that he was saying, he had even a hold. I know you guys didn't have the benefit of being there, but what they were describing was hard to describe, that hold. And they were face to face. And he was allegedly putting his chin on top of Dan Hudson's head to push his head down, to asphyxiate him. And so,
and his forearms were on each side of his neck.
Yes, sir. It's hard to do when, right, basically like this, and they were face to face. He's a really big guy. Dan Hudson's a really big guy. But so what happened was, he was saying, and even when down on the floor like that, y'all need to let me go. He didn't say, I'm going to kill y'all. He's totally capable of saying that. He had just said it.
Well, can't a person, and hasn't this court opined that a person can have the intent to do two things at once?
Yes, ma'am. In other words, very argument very well made by Mr. Jeffrey, and I spent some time on it last night. But in an attempt case, I think that it has to be specifically shown, and I remembered this case from law school, the shooting the lamp. I remember because I had Ron Baskill. I remember the shooting, the Thacker case. I think it doesn't stand on all fours with this case, but the man knew that somebody was in the tent. He shot the lamp anyway, didn't kill anybody, and here's where the case is important. If he had killed somebody, it's obviously a homicide, probably a murder because of transferred intent. But he didn't, and so the court specifically says, you can only infer, on an attempt case, you can only infer the act so far as the act actually happened. And in this case, what happened was Dan Hudson was choked to a point that he was, in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, beginning to lose consciousness. He did not lose consciousness. In the Hayward case, the defendant in that case was running roadblocks and charging through the roadblocks with police officers standing directly there. They found that his intent was not to kill him. I think that he would have been guilty of eluding, failing to yield, all of these things, but, I mean, murder's a big deal. He didn't have intent to kill any particular officer. That doesn't necessarily stand on all fours once on reflection in the evening last night, because we have in our sights our victim. We don't have random victims, and so I concede. But if you take all of the cases, as I was saying, Judge B, he has some intent. We have to infer that. Is it so unlikely, and I know you defer some judgment to the fact finder who is there and can take the credibility of everybody into determination, but when there are multiple intents, I think that you have to look at what exactly could have been an alternate explanation, because they do have to find that intent beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not a civil standard, more likely than not. And so I think the fact finder has to say, okay, I believe beyond any reasonable doubt that his intent was only to kill him. His intent, and so was intent to choke him and kill him, choke him first and kill him. I liken it to, and I tried to back it down and say, okay, it's an asphyxiation case. What if Officer Byrd would have come into Dan Hudson's bedroom and Alkeem Howard was on top of him with a pillow? Okay, what alternate explanation would Alkeem Howard have for being in Dan Hudson's bedroom, asphyxiating with a pillow or with a choke cord? Or in an arm bar, just like it was. He would have had no alternative explanation. In this case, there's a very viable alternative explanation, the one that's laid out in Hayward, that he intended to escape. In his mind, at that time, he had thought that if he could leverage Dan's consciousness, not his life, but his consciousness, then Officer Byrd would let him go. That was his only bargaining chip. It wasn't right. It's not the way the law should be. We shouldn't be able to do that to one another. But did he intend to capital? Did he intend capital murder? And the I think that it is a reasonable explanation that he did not. And therefore, if two explanations stand on equal footing, the judge just can't arbitrarily accept the one that incriminates my client. Thank you for your
time. Any questions?
No further questions.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning. Wait for my clock here. Good morning. May it please the court. Donald Jeffrey from the Attorney General's office. The facts here, as the court knows, fairly straightforward. It was, in fact, a choking incident. As counsel indicated, we have argued, and it is consistent with this court's case law, that there can be multiple intents. It's consistent with the concurrence in the Caleb Hughes case. And actually, as I was preparing for argument last night, I observed that in what was an attempted malicious wounding of a police officer case, Holly, which was fairly recently decided, this court, in fact, went to great lengths to apply that very principle in a similar situation. I would note elsewhere in the case, the court does say that it compares that case to an attempted murder case, but it says essentially the reasoning is equally applicable. At the end of the case, the court said, this is not a situation where to accept the theory that Holly was attempting to escape would necessarily exclude the hypothesis that he was also attempting to maim or injure Officer Kiros, I guess is how you pronounce it. There can be multiple intents. And here, as the court has indicated, he was told to let go multiple times. He was told that he was going to be shot multiple times. And even after he was shot, he continued to tighten his grip momentarily. I think the best evidence you have in the record comes from both police officers, and they either use the term a minute or about a minute. And I recognize that if somebody's got their hands around his or her hands around your neck, that might seem like an eternity. I certainly hold out the possibility. It could have really only been 15 seconds. But the fact of the matter is that He continued to tighten his grip even after he was shot. So on top of the other facts you have here, I would suggest to you that the finding was not plainly wrong. And last, what I would note, as I did on brief, the court is certainly aware that a defendant is not required to testify, but in the Turner case, which wasn't cited on brief, the Supreme Court says that the trier of fact doesn't have to supply evidence that's lacking. You have a prima facie case of intent to kill. Mr. Howard gets on the stand, and his testimony is, this event didn't even happen at all. He doesn't say, I was only trying to escape. So I think when you couple that with the other evidence in the case, which frankly standing on its own would have been adequate, the finding of the trial court was not plainly wrong or without supporting evidence. Unless the court has further questions, I'd ask you to affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The court, obviously, in the transcript, many times takes me to task for what were the natural and probable consequences if you hold somebody's neck. If you just keep holding, and I have to concede, it's going to be a lack of oxygen to the brain and death. But the case law is very clear that I never really knew what bootstrapping meant in law school, but since I've been practicing, I think this is bootstrapping. You're pulling one argument up with the boots. You're pulling the pants up with the boots. You're pulling one argument up with another, and I think they have to stand on their own. If the natural and probable consequences of what happened were just what happened, that Dan almost, that officer, the natural and probable consequence is that Officer Byrd shot him. She didn't want to. She's, but that was what happened. If we had a case where Officer Byrd was not there, and I think that would change the facts to say that his intent could have been to kill and escape. He's got a double intent. If Officer Byrd wasn't there to stop him.
Excuse me.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Parrish, would you have any idea in reference to this polygon?
No. I hope it's not a polygraph.
No, it's not. I assure you. I wouldn't have my hand on it if it were.
I think it's a phone. I wouldn't answer it.
Exactly.
I would not answer that.
I'm not going to answer, but I was going to cut it off. But I think it's already off. Pardon us.
That's okay.
We're now displaying how
technology savvy we are.
Yes.
Okay. It's finished. Okay. It's finished.
Sorry. I apologize. We'll restore your time to you. Thank you.
If Officer Byrd was not present, then his intent very well could have been, if I kill this guy and get away, that's no problem. My girlfriend has run. Her friend has run. But as it was. Even if he kills this guy, there's an officer standing there with a 9mm. His intent was to leverage. And I worry about double-edged swords, but I also thought of the analogy. If he would have had Officer Hudson in an arm bar, or like you see in the movies, with the gun to his head and trying to shuffle out of the room, would he have had the intent to kill him or just leverage him for an escape? I think that Commonwealth is under a task to prove that he intended to kill him, not just elude, capture, or under a definite intent. And you cannot say that the natural and probable consequences of asphyxiation or death, when at any point, as Judge Beals has determined, his intent could change. He could just say, "Okay, I give up," and he might have done that if she hadn't shot him. It didn't sound like it from the transcript, but. His intent could have changed that way. It doesn't always have to change for the worse. And to assume the worst of my clients, we take him at his word for the malicious wounding, but we don't take him at his word that he just wants to escape. And I guess
the argument why he didn't try to escape at that point, that he had his chin over him and had him in pretty bad, he wasn't fighting him at that point,
any, yes,
was that the other officer had hold of his dreadlocks or part of him, and he really, as you say, couldn't. He knew he couldn't run then, or he wouldn't have gotten very far.
Yes, and so his intent was to have Deputy Hudson back up, to have everybody get off of him, and for him to walk out, kind of like the analogy where he shuffles out with the gun to the victim's head, the hostage's head. In this case, he was at his wit's end, but again, being at your wit's end is not circumstantial evidence that you're going to kill somebody to get your way. Thank you.
Thank you. And now come down and greet council.